Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Brachos Daf Yud Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 3 lines from the top of Daf Yud Tes. Before we begin the shiur, you will notice a volcano shape, a trapezoid, around the expression Kol HaMesaper, where the Gemara will feature here and in a few lines another comment regarding speech or talk concerning those that have already passed away. Omar of Yitzchok, Acharei Kol HaMesaper Acharei HaMeis Kilu Mesaper Acharei HoEven. He who speaks ill of those that have already passed away is tantamount to speaking about a rock. Now, there are two explanations regarding this analogy. Iko diamri delo yati. Some say it's simply because they just don't know. The iko diamri diyadi velo ichbas lehu. There are those that say they are aware of what's being said, but it just is of no concern to them. It appears that these two approaches reflect the two opinions that had been expressed in the previous sugya, in the previous daf, regarding do the dead know what's going on. The Gemara asks, is it so simple to say that the ill speech about the dead is of no consequence? Amy, is that so? V'omar av popa, chad ishtoi milso basrei demar Shmuel. There was a person who spoke ill of Shmuel, who was a great Amora. V'nofal kanyo mi telolo, a reed or a beam fell from a roof, a heavy beam or reed, literally, fell from a tlola, from a roof, ubaza la'arnika demoche, and it pierced or cracked that person's skull. So we see that ill speech concerning the dead is of consequence, and not like Rabbi Yitzchok seemed to say that it's like talking about a stone. The Gemara answers, shiny tzumer abonan. The case involving this story involved the speech or the ill speech concerning Tzum Rabbanan, a Talmud Chochem. In this case, it was Shmuel. And the fate that befell the ill speaker, it's a phenomenon or a function of the Kutcha Brichu, the Almighty Tova Biyakre, would have to do with taking vengeance, or literally collecting the honor, defending the honor of Shmuel. As we continue, we notice a double underline. This marking heightens the name Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. We have a memra of his here, and a few lines later, another memra, another comment of his. The first one ties into the previous point made by Rabbi Yitzchok about ill speech concerning the dead. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kol HaMesaper Achar Mitosan Shel Tamidei Chachomim, Noifel BeGehenem. He who speaks ill of the Torah sages after their death is destined to a stay in purgatory. Shenemar VeHamatim Akalkaloisam Yolichem Hashem Espolei Oven Shalom Al Yisrael. And now the drosha on that is, afilu b'shal sheshalom al Yisrael, even at the time when there is peace, meaning that the ill speech, if spoken to a live person, would cause strife. In this case, we're talking about ill speech concerning someone that there will be no strife caused, and that is after death, as Tosfos explains. Even so, they will be directed toward Gehenim. The Meforshim point out, I believe in the Marsha, he takes this posik v'amatim and uses the word matim like the word mitah, the bed or the coffin of the dead. Continuing in the Gemara, Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Im Roisa Talmud Chacham Sha'avar Avera Balayla, if one saw a Talmud Chacham commit a sin at night, Al Tahar Achrov Biyoim, don't continue thinking ill of him the next morning, Shema Osa Tshuva. He may have done penitence. The Gemara responds to this in a wonderment and says, Shema Saka Betuch, he may have repented. Elo vadai osa tshuva. He definitely would have repented. So that the concept or the phenomenon of ill speech concerning Talmidei Chachamim, concerning Torah sages, is simply unfounded. And all the more so if one seeks to speak ill of a Talmid Chacham after his demise, there would be certainly no grounds for that based on what Tana Rebbe Shmuel teaches, that a Talmid Chacham, when he sins, he definitely does tshuva, he repents immediately. Vahani mili bedvorim shebegufo. This idea of making an assumption that the Talmud Chacham took matters of penitence into hand and repented, this is true with regard to offenses he may have committed on a personal level. Personal meaning between he and himself, or between himself and the Almighty. Avol b'mamoina, when it comes to an offense of a monetary related matter, then penitence is not accomplished ad demahadu lemore, until the funds are returned or restored to the one to whom the money is owed, whether it be a function of damages caused or theft. So then we don't assume automatic tshuva, because more than just the internal recognition of an offense committed, more is necessary, as we just mentioned, the return of the money. The Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, another comment of his, and this is featured by our markings with a long point marking. The nun you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text that's encircled represents a nekuda, a point, with a vertical descending dashed line up till the point that this nekuda ends. On the outside margin under our nosei heading, we have written nidui. Nidui is a form of excommunication. Avur zilzul rabbonan, because of insulting or disparaging Torah sages or rabbinic related matters. The Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, be'eshem ve'arba mekoymus, 24 places based in Minadin al Kvod Harav, 24 instances where we see that the court censured individuals because of disparagement of rabbinic figures. The Kulon Shoninu b'Mishnasenu, all of these 24 places can be found in Mishnayis literature. Omar Le Rebbe Lozer, Hecha. Rebbe Lozer turns to Shulman Levi and says, where are the 24 places? And we can rest assured that Rebbe Lozer was well-versed, expert in Mishnayis literature, and hence grounds for his question, where do you find 24 places where you see excommunication in Mishnaic literature concerning disparaging of rabbinic figures? Omar le lechi tishkach. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, go out and find them. Nofak dok v'ashkach tlas. He went out, Rabbi Lozer went out and investigated and looked into the matter and found three places. One, hamezalzel metilas yadayim, a source in which disparagement concerning hand washing is mentioned, and hamasaper achar mitosin shel talmid chacham, another source where ill speech was made concerning a Torah sage after his demise, and three, vamegis daitoi klapei mala, one who in prayer spoke to the Almighty too harshly, too forcefully, resulting in grounds for excommunication. And now the diamonds actually feature the three sources that were just mentioned. So you'll notice as you scan ahead in the Gemara, three diamonds. Hamesaper achar mitosen shel talmidei chachamim mahi. What do you mean by that, speaking ill of a Torah sage after his death? Disnan. So we have the following source. It's a Tanaic source, it's a Mishnah source, and here it's not, in this course of this sugya, it's not sufficient simply to relate to the sources as Tanaic, but more specifically, unlike our standard approach, Mishnayos sources. The term Tanaic takes in more than just Mishnayos. You find Brises and Midrashim also classified as Tanaic sources. But for our purposes, in this sugya, we have to be more specific. And this is a Mishnah. And in the Mishnah, we will see this phenomenon of Misapar Achamitos and Shetamil Chachomim. The specific topic in the source deals with a sota, a married woman who was suspect of immorality with another man, someone other than her husband, after her husband warned her not to be with so-and-so. Part of the process of dealing with a woman who is suspect is her being brought to the Beis HaMikdash, where she is given water to drink, water that comes from the kior, and there is quite a bit more detail to this water preparation that's beyond the purview of our sugya here. However, the issue here is what kind of woman, by way of background, which women are subjected to the process of drinking and which are not. So it says here, who hoya omer, and the who is a pronoun but very important to make reference, and we've done it by writing in the name between the lines, Akavio ben Mahalalel. Hu hoya omer ein mashkin loy es hagiyoros velo es hamishuchheros. That the, in the event that the master of the bond maid had warned the background of Mishuchar is that she had been a bondmaid, but rather if the man who married her or a Gioris is a convert woman and she got married and her husband, the husband of the Gioris or of the Mishuchares, warns her not to be with a particular man and she then is found in private with him. So Akavi Mamala ben Malal says that those kind of women, a Gioris or Mishuchares, will not be subjected to the drinking. And Rashi points out the source for this is because the Pasuk says B'nei Yisrael. And the term B'nei Yisrael in this case is used to the exclusion of the wife of a Ger or of a Mishuchares. Or a Mishuchares. V'chachomim Omrim Mashkin. The Chachamim disagree and say that these kind of women are subjected to the drinking. The Omru Lo, the Rabbonon said to Akavi b'Malalel to prove their point, Maisa b'Karkimis Shivcha Mishuchreres Bishalayim. There was an incident in Karkimis, which either is the name of a place or it's the woman's name, which featured a shivcha mishuchares, a freed bondmaid that had gotten married. Yerushalayim, the incident took place in Yerushalayim. V'hishkua Shmaya v'Avtayon, and the two great tanoim, Shmaya v'Avtayon, saw to it that she shall drink. The Omar lehem and Akavi ben Malalel said, you can't bring a proof from a story involving Shmaya v'Avtayon and their giving a mishuchares to drink. Dugma hishkua. The term dugma means something like, similar to. In other words, Akav Malal said they, Shmai Vatayon, were known converts. And being that they were converts, they had, we'll say, as far as Akavia ben Malal is concerned, they had an agenda to promote the significance of converts, and hence it was important for them to treat her the same way as you would treat a Jew who is a Jew through heredity. And as a result of this, of his offhanded reference to Shmai v'Avtayim, insinuating that they had some type of personal agenda to advance, by his saying Dugma Hishkua V'niduhu, they, the Rabbonon, censured or excommunicated Akavi Mamaleo, Umeis Beniduyo, and he died while still in that state of Nidui, Visaklu Beisdin Esarono, and the court placed a rock on his coffin, which is what is done when someone dies in a state of excommunication. So there is an example of Misaper Achar Mitosu Shem Chomim that Akavi Malal was guilty of speaking offhandedly concerning Shmaya Vavtayin after they had already passed away. What's the Tanaic reference to this? To one who treats offhandedly or in a disparaging fashion the law of Netilas Yadayim. It should be pointed out that Netilas Yadayim is a rabbinic invention. The need for washing one's hands before eating bread as one example of Netilas Yadayim. That's a rabbinic invention, and if one were to belittle it or make light of it, he would be under the category of what Rabbi Shimon Levi described as someone who was in violation of Kavod Harav. So the source says, Om Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda appears here to argue with what was mentioned in the previous source regarding Akavim Amalel, and Omar Rehuda, he says, Chas v'shol shakavim Amalel nisnadeh, heaven forbid even the thought that Akavim ben Malalel was the one put into Cherem, into Nidui. She'ein ez azora ninelis al kol Yisrael. This is a reference to the time during which people brought the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan. All of Klal Yisrael assembled in Yerushalayim in the Beis HaMikdash, and without getting into details, which is featured in Maseches Psochim at greater length, suffice it to say that there were myriads of individuals, and the description here is that the Azora gates, when they were closed, there was no one greater in the temple courtyard in terms of Chochmah, wisdom, Torah, purity, Birashchet, fear of sin, Ka'akavya ben Malal. He had all of these qualities, and he was head and shoulders above everyone else in these areas. So he could not have been the one that would have spoken ill of Shmaya v'Avtalion. Ela Esmini, who was the one that was censured? As a Lozer ben Chanoich, Shepikpek ben Atilas Yudayim. It was he who was censured, who had questioned or spoke disparagingly of the mitzvah of Netilas Yadayim. Ukshemes, when he died, Sholchu Beisdin Venichu Evin Gedola Alarono, they placed a great stone, a large stone on his coffin, Lelamdecha, to teach us Shekoha Misnade Umeis Beniduyo Beisdin Soklin Es Arono. Hamegis Daito Klape Malo, one who speaks overly forceful to the Almighty in prayer, is also grounds for nidui. Mahi, what is being referred to here? Disnan Sholach Loi Shimon ben Shetach L'choni HaMagel. Shimon ben Shetach sent to Choni HaMagel. These are towering figures in the early Tanaic period. And he had sent a message to Choni HaMagel, who, for many of you, has gained fame through a number of stories featured in Maseches Tainis. One of them was his making a circle, standing in the middle of it, and demanding rainfall in a time of drought, demanding from the Almighty. So that type of prayer is categorized here as Megis Daito Klapi Malo, putting the Almighty on the spot, so to speak. So Shimon ben Shetach said, if you were not, he says, Tzorchato Lisnados, you are really deserving of being censured. Vilmole Choni Atol, if you were not the great Choni, the great and pious Choni that has a very close relationship with the Almighty, if you were not he, Goizrani Olecho Nidui, I would have imposed nidui upon you. Avomai said, but what can I do? Shato mischate lifnei hamokom. You complain, you bellyache, or you cast your words heavenwards. The oiseloch ritzoncho, and the Almighty fulfills your requests. Keben shemischate lifnei aviv voisele ritzono. Just like a child, a son complains to his father and belly aches and kvetches again on, and the father fulfills his desires. V'alecha HaKosov Omer, and regarding you, the Pasuk says, Yismach Avicha V'imecha V'sogel Yodosecha. The parents of this of child are happy with them. The Gemara asks, V'su Lecha, are there no other sources? We indicated before that Rabbi Elazar only found three sources in which Nidui was mentioned as a consequence of Zilzol Talmidei Chachamim. V'ho'ika, is there not the following? And we feature with a triangle and noted on the side under our Mivne heading, Hatzo'is Noisofois L'Nidui Al Kavoid Chachamim. Additional suggestions of sources that feature Nidui because of a violation of the honor of the wise man, the Torah sages. V'lomo Rebbe Elazar lo hiskir gamos, and the question here is why did Rebbe Elazar not refer to the following sources? So, is there not v'ho'iko detoni Rav Yosef, is there not the source that Rav Yosef taught? Todos ish Romi, Todos is the name of a person from Rome. Hinig es b'nei Romi, he used to lead the people of Rome in a custom, in a practice, lachilim doyim kulosin b'leile psochim, on the what we call Pesach or Seder night, Leil Pesach, he would have people roast entire goats. A goat is a type of animal like a sheep, which are fit for being offered as a korban Pesach. And the Korban Pesach itself was prepared in Yerushalayim. It was roasted, it was tzliesh, in a complete form. In other words, it wasn't dismembered into different limbs or body parts. A Gedi Mekulas is exactly that, where the animal is roasted whole. And he used to have them have the Jewish community in Rome roast complete goats on Leil Pesach, on Pesach night. Sholach leShimon ben Shetach. It's interesting that Shimon Shachlech was the one featured in the source just before this. He sent a message to Todos and said, "Ilmoli Todos atol, if you were not the great and pious Todos, gozranu vechanidui, you would be subject to a nidui, censuring, punishment. Sha'ato ma'achilas Yisrael kochim bachutz, because your practice borders on Jews consuming sacrificial meat outside the Beis HaMikdash." Well, they weren't really sacrifices, it was just a method of preparing these goats on Pesach night. So Rashi explains a little more. Across from here, Rashi goes, "Rani l'chanidui, v'ainu nami l'chvod harav." This is also under the realm of kavod harav, honor to rabbis. "She'osru chachamim sadover." This is something that the rabbonin had forbidden, preparing full goats and sheep roasted on Pesach night. "L'fishehu karoiv l'achilos Yisrael kochim b'chutz." It's getting too close for comfort to an isra for prohibition of eating sacrificial meat outside the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, this was not sacrificial meat, but it looks like it. Sharoya sovar shekdusha l'shem Pesach. People, onlookers who see Jews Pesach night preparing entire goats roasted whole, will think that people had sanctified them as sacrifices, and that mistake would be, if it were actually practiced like that, in other words, people had sanctified things and then prepared them outside the Beis HaMikdash, certainly in Rome, that would certainly be a problem of kochim b'chutz. So what Todos was doing was leading people to think erroneously that one could do this, that one could offer sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash. But it was just it's a question of creating a wrong impression, and he shouldn't have done that. So the question right now is, why isn't this cited as an additional source of the 24 that Rebbe Elazar was asked to look for? The Gemara answers, it's a great source. However, b'mishnosenu karmin v'ol b'risahi. Rabbi Yishuv and Levi said that they were found in Mishnayos literature, and this is not a Mishnah, this is a b'risa source. The Gemara asks, u'v'masnisin leko? And in Mishnayos, there aren't additional examples other than the three mentioned before. Vo'ika Hodisnan, is there not the following? The following is a source, you can see we've put a frame around it, but we will have to note that, first of all, there's a Gemara interruption, and that's noted by the bracketed section that comes up in the middle of this. And within the frame, there is something that's dashed underlined. You can see the word Vitanya. A brisa is made part of this particular frame. However, we start with a quote from a Mishnah in Bava Metzia, which describes a machloikis between Rabbi Elezer HaGodol and the Chachomim. I should say that this is a Mishnah that's found in Maseches Bava Metzia concerning a tanur. A tanur is a an earthenware or clay. A clay oven, we'll say, was actually portable, and as such, it was something that was something that could be a kabel tuma. If you have a kli cheres tanur and it was tome, by smashing it or cutting it down, reducing it from its original size, would metire it. In this case, they cut the cylindrical shaped tanur into discs, which, as just separate discs, it would of course be tahor. However, they reassembled these clay discs by putting a disc and then a layer of sand or dirt with cement and then another disc, and reassembled these discs into a cylinder. Between each disc was a choil and tit, which is dirt and cement. However, unlike a clay tanur, clay oven, this was not put into a kifshon, a kiln, for hardening, but was left to harden naturally in the environment. The question is this thing, this reassembled tanur, capable of being mekabel tuma as a kli cheres, or is it not viewed? Do you emphasize the discs, which were made of clay, or do you emphasize the dirt that is between each one? And this became a machlokes tanoim, and it's featured here. Chotchu chulios v'nosan chul bein chulio v'chulio. They cut the tanur into discs and placed a dirt between each one of the discs. Rabbi Elazar mitayer v'chachomim mitamin. Rabbi Elazar declares this to be a non-kli cheres, and hence it's not mekabel tuma, and the Chachamim say it is. V'zeu tanuro shel achnoi, and this is the oven of the serpent. Now, the achnoi is a serpent, and the Gemara interrupts here, and that's why we have this in a bracketed section. The Gemara asks, this is not part of the Mishnah, it says, my achnoi, what is that? Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, melamed shikifu halochus keachnoi ze v'timuhu. It teaches that the Chachamim, in arguing with against Rabbi Elazar, they surrounded him with legal arguments, just as a serpent surrounds its prey. And after offering numerous arguments against him, the tanur, this chulia type tanur, was declared timu, was declared tomei. Vitanya osu ayom heviu kol taharois shetir Rabbi Elazar that day. That the Chachamim, will say, overruled Rabbi Elazar's ruling. They brought all the food that had been prepared using this type of this tanur that Rabbi Elazar said would not communicate tumah, and they said it would. And the sarfum lufanov, they burnt all of this food in front of him as burnt on the grounds that it was tumah. Ulebesof birchu, and at the end they then censured him. Birchu is a euphemism, meaning nidui. Rashi on this explains, "Ubirchu lefishi hirba ma'oid lachloik bedover zeh." He was a minority opinion, and he went overboard. And if you look at the actual story in Maseches Bava Metzia Daf Nun Tesom Beis, you will see how he argued very forcefully and actually. He brought in the forces of nature to prove his point through, we'll call it, miraculous intervention. And yet the Rabbanan stood their ground, and because of his forcefulness, he was fit to be censured, which of course is an example of Mezilzul Talmidei Chachamim. The question then is, why did Rabbi Elazar not mention this source? The Gemara answers, "Afilu hachi nidui b'masnisin lo tnan." You'll notice with our markings, the term birchu, which is nidui, is not in the Mishnah section; it's in the Braisa section. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said that you'll find the references to nidui because of Kavod Rav in Mishnayos. The Gemara asks, where are the 24 places then? If Rabbi Elazar only found three, and we attempted to show additional examples, but they fell by the wayside because they weren't Mishnah, so where are they? The Gemara answers, Rabbi Shulam ben Levi, Medama Milsa Lemilsa. Rabbi Shulam ben Levi will tell you, you don't find explicit references to Nidui because of Zilzul Talmid Chachamim in 24 different Mishnayos. But if you compare that which you do see here explicitly to incidents that are of a similar nature in other Mishnayos, you will find 24 references. Once again, even though Nidui isn't mentioned explicitly, but similar incidents of people speaking too forcefully or too forceful an argument, those kind of things are found in other Mishnayos, and by comparing topic to topic, you'll come up with 24 places. On the other hand, for Rabbi Elazar, lo medama milsa. Rabbi Elazar was looking for things that were explicit, and he didn't adopt this approach of comparing. Hence, he didn't come up with 24 places. Continuing with the Gemara, which refers back to the Mishnah, noisei hamita v'chilufan. We spoke about people that were involved with carrying the coffin and their possible exemption from kriyashma, depending on what they are expected to do or have done already. Tana Rabbanan, ein motzien es hameis samuch l'kriyashma. One is not to take a corpse out for burial near the time of kriyashma. The fear being that if they engage in taking care of the corpse at that time, they won't end up saying kriyashma at all. Ve'im hischilu, if they started dealing with the corpse, ein mafsik, and then they continue, even though it might be at the expense of their saying kriyashma. The Gemara asks, Eini, is that so that you aren't supposed to take the mace out the zman of kriyashma? V'ha'ar Rav Yosef afku somach kriyashma. When Rav Yosef passed away, they took him out for burial near the time of kriyashma. The Gemara says that is different. Odom choshuv shani, a very important person like Rav Yosef, is different. And there, the need to care for him is of uppermost concern. And even if it happens to be at the time of near the time of kriyashma, shelifnei amita v'shelachar amita. This is a quote from the Mishnah. But the Gemara itself stands on its own, and before we learn the Gemara, the topic heading reads as follows: Kriyashma Tfila Bizman Haheshped Lifnei Kvuras Hameis. We'll touch on the issue of saying the recitation of the saying of Kriyashma at the time of the eulogy being offered before the burial. Tana Rabbanan, Ha'oskin Behesped, those who are involved with the eulogy, Bizman Shemeis Muta Lifneim, Nishmotim Echod Echod V'Kurid. One by one, people will just leave the eulogy and recite the Kriyashma. In other words, you don't have a mass exodus from the eulogy, but one by one, people slip out to say Kriyashma. Ein hameis muta lifneim, in the event that the body is not in the place of the eulogy, where the eulogy is taking place, then hein yoshvin v'koren, the people, the community shall sit and recite kriyashma, v'hu, the mourner himself, yoshev v'domeim, sits in silence. Hein oimden umesfalen, they then, after kriyashma, rise to say shmon esrei, v'hu oimed umatztik olav esadin. He, the mourner, and of course we're talking about before the burial, he stands and justifies the heavenly sentence passed down upon him. The Omer, Ribon Ha'olamim, he says, Almighty, Harbe Chatosi Lefanecha V'lo Nifrata Mimeni Echad Minei Elef. I have sinned numerous sins, and you haven't punished me even 1/1000th of what I deserve. He wrote some Lufanach Hashem Elokeinu Shetigdor Pitzaseinu It should be the will. It should be your will that you construct the breaches amongst us. In this case, the loss that we suffered, upritzus kam chayisrael, and the losses, the breaks in all of Israel, berachamim, through mercy. Omar Abaye, in commenting on this text, says, lo miboyele le'inish le'mei ma'achi, a person should not express himself thusly. Specifically, the comment, lo nifrata mimeni, that I've sinned and you haven't punished me that which I'm really deserving. Not to say that. The Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, the Chaintona Mishmei de Rabbi Yossi, it has been taught by Rabbi Shimon Lakish, and likewise a Tanaic source in the name of Rabbi Yossi, La'olam al yiftach odom piv la'satan. A person should not literally open his mouth to the satan. It means like challenge the satan. The Omar Rav Yosef, Maikra, and what do we mean by challenging the satan? By saying that I haven't been punished. Even 1/1000th is like saying I haven't been punished enough, and I should have more punishment coming to me. So a person should certainly not speak that way. And there's a pasuk, my crawl. What's the pasuk that expresses this sentiment? Shenema kimat kistom hoyinu. The population, the people said we were like stone. Stone was a place of evil. My hadu lehu navi. What did the navi respond to them? Shimu devar Hashem, ketzine stom. Well, then listen unto the words of the Lord, O you leaders, officers of stom. In other words, they call themselves stom, and the Almighty then, in fact, refers to them as people of stom, and of course they suffered a catastrophic calamity. Kovru es hames v'chozru v'chulei. Im yecholim lahas v'ligmor es kula in. From the Mishnah, it sounded like after burying the dead, there was the practice of then offering consolation to the mourners, and the issue of the Mishnah was after burying the dead, if there was enough time to go from the grave site to where the mourners were being consoled, if there was enough time to recite the Kriya Shema. And the Gemara understands that at this point, to recite the entire Kriya Shema, then one should do so. But if there isn't enough time, enough time lapse between going from the grave to where the mourners were located, in other words, the mourners were located relatively close to the grave, then if there isn't enough time to say the whole thing, they don't say anything. So that's what the Gemara infers from the Mishnah. Im yicholim lahasel ligmor es kula in, then yes, then say the Kriya Shema. Avol perek echad oy pasuk echad lo, but one chapter or one pasuk, that wouldn't be worthwhile. In other words, you wouldn't say that. That's either like all or nothing. The Gemara asks for Aminu, but we can raise a contradiction to this from a source. It says kovru as a mace v'chazru. The mace was the corpse was buried, and they returned from the burial. Im yichol lahasul v'ligmor. Afilu perek echad o pasuk echad. If they can start and finish even one chapter or even one pasuk, then that should be done. So you see, contrary to the way we inferred from our Mishnah, the Gemara answers, hachi nami komar. The inference that we made was incorrect, and in fact, the Mishnah as it is to be understood like that which was revealed in this source, and it's to be read thusly. Im yicholim lahasvil ligmor. If they, coming from the grave to where the mourners are, could start and finish, afilu perek echad o afilu pasuk echad, even one chapter, or one paragraph, or one pasuk, ad shlo yigiu l'shura, before they get to the rows where the community was found comforting, consoling the mourners, yaschilu, then they should begin and say the one paragraph or even the one pasuk v'imlav. If there's too little time, in other words, the mourners are so close to the grave that you wouldn't have enough time to say even one pasuk, then lo yasil, then they shouldn't start. We continue now at the top of Amud Beis. Ha'oimden b'shura v'chulei. The Gemara continues with a Tanaic source, being specific about the positioning of the people. Shura haroya pnima ptura, the row of consolers that sees inside to the inner circle. Ptur, they are exempt. And Rashi explains on the top, Horoy Pnimo, Es Chalal Hahekef Achore Shura Hapnimis, V'Ovel Yoshev Sham. This would be something other than the innermost row facing the mourner. So it would be the row, this we'll say the second row in from the front row. They are the shur that's roya pnima. They see toward the inner row. So they're exempt. Vishena roya pnima, if they're further back, so they don't see that inner row of comforters, they are then chayevis. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, Haboyim machmas ha'ovel pturin, or machmas ha'evel pturin. Those people who assemble there because of the passing, because of the mourning, then they are exempt. Machmas atzmon chayevin, if they came there because of their own curiosity, but not because of payment of respect, then they are not exempt. So it would seem from Rabbi Yehuda, even if you're located on the innermost row, but you're not there to offer consolation to the mourners, but rather you're just there for curiosity, so it would seem that he would require you to say Kriya Shema. Omer Yehuda Omer Rav Hamotze Kilayim Bevigdoi. Person discovers that he is wearing shatnez, garments made of a mixture of wool and linen. Poshtan, he is expected to remove the clothing he is wearing, afilu b'shuk, even in the public, in the market. And if that was the only layer of clothing that he was wearing, so he would end up standing naked. Nonetheless, that is what's expected of him. My taimo, why is this so? Because ein chokhma v'ein tevuna v'ein etza l'neged Hashem. The explanation is kol mokum sheishchul Hashem, wherever there is a desecration of the name of the Almighty, or a we'll say a public desecration of His mitzvos, ein cholkin kovod l'rav. We don't bestow honor even unto a rabbinic figure, even unto someone who is honorable. In other words, when it comes to a violation of a mitzvah, then the rectification of that must be made even at the expense of personal honor. Before going further in the Gemara, we have a topic heading at the side, Kol Mokum Shiesh Chilul Hashem Ein Chokin Kovel Rav, and we have an indication that this goes to Daf Chof Omed Aleph. In addition, we have markings that we want to explain. There's a series of triangles, and we've attempted to keep track of the number of these triangles through numbering down the column to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. And if you scan ahead, you'll see five triangles, and a double underline emphasizing the expression Amai. Why do we say whatever we say in these sources, which seem to challenge, as we under our Mivneh heading on the margin we've written, these are kushas al klal hanal. These are questions or challenges to the above rule. So after presenting each rule, we'll see that we seem to take into consideration personal honor or honor to humanity, human beings, even though it is at the expense of a halachic violation. So that what we would say, Kovan Abrias, overrules the need to keep a particular halacha, contrary to what Rav Yehuda Amar Rav is teaching at the beginning of this sugya. The Gemara, Meisvei, Kovruas Ameis, V'chozru. A burial took place, and the people are now returning from the burial site, their goal being to meet up with the mourner and console him. So they are coming back from the burial. L'fnei shnei drachim, and there are two paths. Achas tohor v'achas tameya. One path is tohor. There's no tuma problem by walking on that particular route. V'achas tameya means under the other path, there is a body that's buried. So that in order to traverse that particular route, one will inevitably become defiled. So, Bo'al B'Torah, if the Ovel chooses the Tohor path, Bo'in Imo B'Torah, the community follows him on the Tohor path, including the Kohanim amongst them. Kohanim are people that must maintain ritual purity in the context of Tumas Meis. In other words, they must avoid becoming defiled through contact with the dead. However, Bo'al B'Tmeah, if the Ovel chooses the Tome route, Bo'in Imo B'Tmeah Mishum Kvodo. The people shall follow him on the Tomei route, including the Kohen, because of the honor due to the Ovel. The Gemara asks, Amai, why is it mutter for the Kohen to, in effect, defile himself because of the honor concern for the Ovel? Lema, why not say the rule mentioned before? Ein Chochma v'ein Tvuna l'neged Hashem. That when it's a matter of a Torah violation or self-respect, we are to pass up on the self-respect, on the issue of dignity, and not violate a Torah law. So here the question is, we see that there is a violation of Torah law. A Kohen is becoming Tomei because of our concern of honoring the Ovel. Tirgumah Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba explains. This source is not what we thought it was, but rather the Beis HaPras Durabonan. It featured a path through a field in which there had been a body buried, but the field was plowed up. That's called a Beis HaPras. And in plowing up a field, the body is certainly not intact anymore. And the maximum problem that would remain are bone fragments that are scattered because of the plowing. That is a Beis HaPras. And the level of Tumah of such a place is rabbinic. We have the following few lines in brackets simply to indicate that this is a detail of Beis HaPras, but the basic answer has been given till this point, and the section, as we said in brackets, is simply details concerning Beis HaPras. The Omer of Yudam Shmuel, Minapech Odom Beis HaPras V'Holech. If a person finds himself on Erev Pesach and he needs to get to the Beis HaMikdash to do his Korban Pesach, and the only route that he has available is through a Beis HaPras, so there's a special allowance made for him to use a blowing device, a bellows, and minapech is to cause wind to blow, air to blow, and he will position it on the floor, on the ground ahead of the point he's about to walk, and using this bellows device, it'll blow to the side any dirt or bone fragments that may be there, and he can continue walking. This is an allowance made only because of the importance of the Korban Pesach, but otherwise, we wouldn't rely on this method of checking for someone who, let us say, wanted to eat truma. But if this were a Torah-level problem, and not rabbinic, so we would not allow this minapeach process. The Omar Rav Yehuda Bar Ashi Mishmei Derav Beis HaPras Shenidash Tohor, a Beis HaPras, a field that had a plowed up grave in it that was nidash, trampled, then it is Tohor because there aren't going to be left any bone fragments even the size of a barley grain which would have communicated Tumah, but being that it was trampled, so any remaining bone matter there would have been crushed. Toshma, we return to the series of questions that are raised against the klal, the rule of Rabbi Yehuda Omar Rav. The Omar Rabbi Elazar Rav Tzadok, he, Rabbi Elazar Rav Tzadok, was a kohen, and he says, Medalgen hayinu al gabi al roinis shel meisim, we used to skip or jump from coffin to coffin, coffin of the dead. In other words, coffins that had bodies in them. and we jumped from coffin to coffin, Likras Malchi Yisrael, to greet Jewish kings. V'lo Likras Malchi Yisrael b'vad omru, this idea or necessity or urgency of seeing a king was stated not only to see a Jewish king, elo afilu Likras Malchi Akum, even if it is to see a Gentile king. She'im Yizkeh, Yavchin Bein Malchi Yisrael l'Malchi Akum. The idea behind this urgency is that in the time to come, when the Jewish kingdom will be restored in its full glory, one will then be able to appreciate all the more the great glory extended or experienced by that future Jewish kingdom, because he will then be able to, we'll say, contrast it with the glory accorded to kings nowadays. In other words, it'll simply be all that much greater. And that is something to appreciate. So therefore, it's important to see what type of honor is accorded nowadays, giving you a standard or a means of measuring even greater honor that will be experienced in the future. That being said, what are we seeing here? We're seeing a Kohen violating a Torah requirement of maintaining ritual purity, you know, a avoidance of defilement through the dead. Here, a Kohen, in effect, is defiling himself through the dead in order to bestow honor to kings, because by going and running to greet the king, you're showing the king honor. Well, am I? Why are we allowing for this? Lema, why not say, Ein chochm vein tfunu vein eitzel l'neged Hashem? As we said before, that when it comes to divine teachings, we don't demonstrate acts of honor to anybody. The Gemara answers, Kidarova. In order to understand the Tanaic source, we will understand in accordance with Rava's teaching, the Omar Rava. Devar Torah oil. As far as Torah concerned, Torah level concerned with Ohel is the laws concerning overshadowing or being in the same confines as a corpse. The rules concerning oil state, Kol sheyesh boi halal tefa chotzeitz b'fnei atuma. If, let us say, the corpse is in an enclosure, that there is a handbreadth of airspace above him, and above that there is some type of covering or roof, then when you are above that roof, you will not be affected by the tuma. So that's what is meant by kol sheyesh bo chalal tefa chotzeitz. It serves as defense, divider in the face of tuma. Meaning the tuma will stop below that particular roof, because from the tuma there was an airspace of a tefach above it till the roof, and now you are above that roof, so you are protected. However, v'shein bo chalal tefach, if there isn't an airspace of a tefach, then eino chotzeitz v'fnei atuma, so the covering won't prevent the tuma from penetrating. V'roi v'aronus yesh b'en chalal tefach, the majority of coffins have this chalal tefach, have this space of a handbreadth in them between the body and the covering. And therefore, on a Torah level, if you skip and jump above an aron like this, especially if you're talking about coffins that are fixed in the ground as you might see in pictures of ancient cemeteries, the majority of those coffins had this space, this halal tefach, and therefore on a Torah level, since we follow the majority, the person would remain tohor. However, v'gozru al sheyesh bohen mishum she'ein bohen, the rabbis imposed a rabbinic stringency and said that all coffins will communicate tuma if you jump over them, even though on a Torah level we said the majority are properly constructed. But the rabbanan imposed a rabbinic stringency concerning all, you know, a ruling over all aronos, over all coffins, because of the minority that in fact don't have that halal tefach, that don't have that handbreadth of space in them. So since we're now dealing on a rabbinic level, Umishum kavoid malachim loy gozu burabonan. Because of the honor due to kings, the Rabbanan didn't impose their rabbinic stringency and left things on a Torah level, and the Torah level says that Roiv Aronos have a halal tefach, therefore all Aronos are beneficiaries of that phenomenon, and therefore there's no Tumah above them. So up till this point, just to recount what we're dealing with, we have the teaching of Rabbeinu Marav, that when it comes to a Torah violation, all other considerations fall away, including considerations of human dignity. We must preserve the whatever Torah teaching that is at stake. And this will explain what he taught, namely that if someone finds that he's wearing shatnez, he shall strip himself of whatever shatnez garments he is wearing, even though that is going to compromise his human dignity. Toshma. We have another question from the source Godol Kovod Abrios, Shedoche es Loisa Seshebetora. Great is the consideration of human dignity, so much so that it overrules a negative commandment in the Torah. So we see that human dignity supersedes a losas, a negative command in the Torah. Vamai, well, why do you say that? If Rav Yehuda Amar Rav's teaching is correct, lema, then say, ein chochma v'ein tvuna v'ein etzel l'neged Hashem. That when it comes to the preservation of Torah teachings, considerations of human dignity are just not factored in. Well, the Gemara answers, Tirgama Rav Bar Shva. Rav Bar Shva explains this source, Kameh de Rav Kana, in the presence of Rav Kana, he explained, Belav de Loi Sosur. This Lav, the negative command mentioned in this Taneg source, was specifically the negative command of Lo Sosur. The Torah says that whatever the rabbis teach, you shall not veer not to your right nor to your left. You must keep and observe rabbinic teachings. So, that being said, Achichu Alei, the people in their presence laughed. They ridiculed his answer. Lav delo sosur doraisahi. Now, we have to explain. Let's go to Rashi. The upper half of the Rashi commentary, Rashi says, Achichu Alei, Inu Sover, those that were present thought, Dafilu amru lo dvar Torah, even if a rabbi, let us say, issues a Torah ruling, a ruling concerning the fulfillment of a Torah precept, v'hu omeid b'fnei hakovod, and their ruling would be at odds with an issue of human dignity, yavor lov, you are to violate the teaching that they are saying, even if it's a Torah level teaching, v'ha hai nami doraisu, but is this not a violation of a Torah teaching? So they ridiculed his answer. Omar Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana, who was the one that Rav Bar Shva was in whose presence he was saying this, Rav Kahana said, Gavu Rabba Omar Milsa, a great man, that's Rav Bar Shva, said something. Lo sachiku ale, don't ridicule what he says. Kol mili derabonon asmechinu al lav de lo sosur. When Rav Bar Shva said that the lo sase referred to in the source that we numbered 3, which Kovod Abrios overrules, it's a case of a rabbinic ruling, not a rabbinic ruling concerning a Torah precept, but a rabbinic level teaching. So that if there is a rabbinic level teaching that for some reason comes at odds with the preservation of human dignity, we will allow you to violate the rabbinic level ruling in order to preserve human dignity. An example of this would be muktzah on Shabbos. For example, the moving of stones or rocks on Shabbos is prohibited. That's called iser muktzah. However, let us say a person, after relieving himself in the facilities, needed to wipe himself clean from his waist, and all he had was rocks that would be available for this purpose, he is entitled to use the rocks because otherwise his human dignity will be compromised because of the filth left on him. So we allow a rabbinic ruling, the Isser of Muktzah, the prohibition of moving rocks, to be overruled for the purpose of preservation of human dignity. And why is that called a lo saseh? And so the Gemara just explained, Ravino just explained, that the license rabbis have to make rabbinic rulings is based on this pasuk, the pasuk that says, whatever the rabbis teach, you shall not veer nor to your right nor to the left, but keep what they say. So that's the foundation for rabbinic rulings in the Torah. However, all that this source is saying is that something that's of a purely rabbinic nature, that is what can be violated, but not something that's of a Torah level nature. Continuing in the Gemara, Toshma, the following source deals with the restoration of lost items. The Torah itself says that you shall not walk by a person's lost animal and avoid it, but rather you shall certainly restore it to its owner. However, through Drushas Chazal, we're able to extract the words of the pasuk and come up with the following teaching. V'hisalamta mehem. The salamta has to do with hiding yourself from it or avoiding the item. Pe'omim she'ato misali mehem u'pomim she'enato misali mehem. At times, you are entitled to avoid returning the lost article, and at other times, you're not. Ha'ketzat. How is this to be understood? Im hoya kayin v'hu beveis ha'kvoros. If the person that discovered a lost item happened to be a kohen, and the lost item, let us say someone's wandering ox, was seen in a cemetery, and a kohen is not allowed to enter a cemetery which will cause him to be defiled through stepping over graves, and in order to get to the lost animal, that's what he would have to do. Oy hoya zokin ve'eno lufi kvoda, or a rabbinic authority, a sage, encountered a lost 2-ton ox, and it would not be within the realm of his dignity to be seen drawing this gigantic creature through the streets of town in order to restore it to its owner. Oh, shahoysom lachtem ruba mishel chavero, or the value of the time, income value of the time spent in returning the item would supersede the value of the item altogether. Under these circumstances, l'kach nemar v'salamto, the Torah says that you don't have to deal with it, deal with the lost item. Well, am I? Why is that so? Leima ein chochma v'ein tvuna v'ein etzel en Hashem. In fact, we can emphasize the second consideration, which was an issue of kavod, of dignity. Why should there be an allowance to preserve the dignity when at the same time you're violating the Torah teaching of avoiding the restoration of the lost item? The Gemara says, Shiny Hossam, that case is different. The Torah itself makes the provision for avoiding its return, so that it's not a function of simply concern for human dignity, but it's the Torah's own ruling qualifying or limiting the circumstances under which you're expected to return lost items. The Gemara asks, "Veligmar mino?" Well, why not learn from that? In other words, here there is the Torah itself is saying preserve dignity at the expense of restoring the lost item, and so we see that the Torah creates a sense or a goal of preserving human dignity. Let's just extend that across the boards and then say one who is wearing shatnez, and in order to if in order to fulfill the Torah precept of not wearing chatnis, you will have to compromise your dignity. You don't have to compromise your dignity by stripping yourself of the chatnis clothing. So why not learn from the case of Hashavas Aveda to our case of chatnis? The Gemara answers, Isura mimamonu lo yalfinon. We're dealing with two different realms of legality. Isura is that area of halacha that does not concern monetary matters, but rather, maybe for lack of better expression, ritual observance, as opposed to financial concern. These are two different realms of law. We don't learn Isur, which is the realm of Shatnez, from the realm of Mamon, which is in the case of lost articles and their restoration. Toshma. Well, we try again to raise a question from another source. This source combines the realm of Tumatara, the need for preserving ritual purity, and the concept of Kovod Abrius in the form of burying the dead. The source at hand is really a concise or a shortened version of a longer source, the Darshan's of Pasuk in Bamidbor Perek Vav Pasuk Zayin, where the Nozir is featured. We've included on the side of the Gemara the relevant Psukim. Pasuk Vav there says, Kol Yemei Hazira Lashem Al Nefesh Meis Lo Yavo. The Nozir is instructed that during the time he is observing his Nozir period, he is not to defile himself to the dead. And it says to the dead, which means across the boards. And yet, Pasuk Zayin enumerates, La'aviv, u'li'imoi, la'ochiv, la'choisoi, lo yitamo, lahem b'moisam, ki nezer l'kov al-roishoi. The question that is dealt with by this particular drosha is why the need for enumerating each one of these relatives when they would have been included under the umbrella expression of al-nefesh meis lo yavoi. So, here, Rashi and the Tosfos give much more background to the drasha, but we will continue in the Gemara to get to the main point. Ula achoisoi ma talmud lomar. Why is sister featured? And this is coming after the Medrash explained why Oviv and Imo and Ochiv are mentioned. What about sister? Ma talmud lomar. In effect, it's saying that the Nozir is not allowed to violate his Nazirus by Tuma to participate in the burial of his sister. So why is sister featured? Harei shehoyah hoylich lishchodes pischov lomus mino. Imagine a person who is on his way to shecht the korban pesach or to circumcise his son. And some of the meforshim explain, imagine you're talking on the 14th of Nisan, which is the time for doing the pesach, and he discovers, he's informed that his sister just died. V'shoma shemeis lo meis, and he heard that his relative died. Yochol yafsuv yitame, is he allowed to, is he expected to stop his trip to the Korban Pesach and go and betam himself to his dead relative? Sister just being an example of all relatives. Yochol yafsuv yitame, can he go back and in effect not do the Korban Pesach, because if he comes tame, so he won't be eligible for doing the Korban Pesach. Amris lo yitamo. The Torah says, and that's the pasuk we read, after it said ula choso, in pasuk zayin, lo yitamo. Alright, so I understand he's not allowed to forego his doing the Korban Pesach. Yochol kishem sheinu metame lehem, kachinu metame lemeis mitzvah. Could it be that just like he is forbidden from being metame to the relative, he, upon discovering an unaccounted for or uncared for corpse by the side of the road, which we call a meis mitzvah, that no one else is taking care of, is he to avoid caring for the meis mitzvah as well? Talmud lomar u'lachoso. Here the Torah uses the word achoso to tell me, lachosu deinu metame, all that the Hoylech Lishchodes Pischo is warned against is Metame himself, defining himself to a relative. Avol Metamehu Lemeis Mitzvah. But he is entitled, or he is expected to tend to the corpse and bury it, even though through this he will not be able to do the Korban Pesach. Amai, why is he? Why is this the case? Why are we preferring the concern for the dead, which is an issue of human dignity, over the mitzvah of Korban Pesach? Lema, why not say Ein Chochma v'Ein Tvuna v'Ein Etzo l'Neged Hashem? The repeating theme that when it comes to the fulfillment of mitzvahs, we don't allow human dignity to be a counter concern. The Gemara answers, Shaini Hosam, Dichtiv Ulachoso. In that case of the person on his way to do the Korban Pesach, the Torah says, do not defile yourself to the relative, but you shall defile yourself to the Meis Mitzvah. The Torah is legislating, go ahead and become Tomei. The Gemara asks, V'ligmar minah, well, that having been said, why not use this as a precedent that Kavod HaBrius pushes aside other mitzvahs, including Kilayim? And this is not a case of momentous. The Gemara answers, shave the altas shiny. A situation where the mitzvah being violated, let us say, the non-offering of the Korban Pesach, that's shave, sit and don't do. In other words, it's a passive violation. Shave altas shiny, a passive violation, is different. Similar to the case of Hashavas Aved as well. You are simply passively violating the return of the lost item. Or, once again, by the Korban Pesach, you are passively violating the offering, the fulfillment of the Korban Pesach. This is in distinction or in contrast to the violation of Kilayim, where you are actively violating the mitzvah of Kilayim, but of Shatnez, by wearing the Shatnez. So that if it's a function of actively violating a Torah teaching versus preservation of human dignity, we'll say you must compromise the human dignity so as to not actively violate a Torah teaching. However, if there's an issue of human dignity and the passive violation of a Torah teaching, we will allow for the passive violation of the Torah teaching in order to preserve human dignity. This concludes today's Gemara section of Gemara Markings Daf Yomi. For those who are interested, our site offers a shiur on today's Daf Yomi Tosfos, presenting the Tosfos text with explanation.